Article 31 requires a complaint before filing against the carrier, except in fraud cases. Complaints must be made within 7 days for checked baggage, 14 days for cargo, and 21 days for delayed cargo. Claims must be filed within 2 years from arrival. Disputes usually don't meet the 1 crore threshold under the Commercial Courts Act, though willful misconduct claims may be used to bypass it. What does this say? Let's understand. Article 31 requires a complaint before filing against the carrier, which means that before you file a case against the carrier for damages or for loss, there has to be a complaint that you need to lodge with the airline, except in there is fraud cases. The complaints must be made within 7 days for checked baggage. That means the baggage that was accompanying you yourself when you are traveling as a passenger. 14 days for cargo, which you have given, handed over to the airline just for travel from, just for the material or the goods to be transported from point A to point B. And 21 days for delayed cargo, for that cargo which has gone beyond the expected days of or the agreed days for delivery. Claims must be filed within 2 years from arrival, which means that you get 2 years to file your claim and put up a claim for damages and loss within 2 years from the date of arrival. Disputes usually don't meet the 1 crore threshold under the Commercial Courts Act, though willful misconduct claims may be used to bypass it. What does this mean? This means that disputes usually don't go up to 1 crore, rupees 1 crore threshold under the Commercial Courts Act, because that is the defined limit for claim of damages. However, there are cases where people would say that the value of goods was much more than what was declared, and try and find out willful misconduct ways to put claims on the airline to bypass this limit of 1 crore. Carriage of goods by sea. Shipping law in India, Indian Bills of Lading Act, Carriage of Goods Act by Sea, 1925, and the Merchant Shipping Act of 1983. The Carriage of Goods by Sea Act 1925 applies to sea transport under bills of lading covering both domestic and international shipments. It defines carrier responsibilities from loading to discharge. We looked at air and we looked at road transport. We also covered railways. Now let's look at carriage by sea. Carriage of goods by sea. Shipping law in India is covered by the Indian Bills of Lading Act, the Carriage of Goods Act, both of 1925, and the Merchant Shipping Act of 1983. The Carriage of Goods by Sea Act of 1925 applies to sea transport where the material is under a bill of lading, covering either domestic or international shipments. It defines the carrier responsibilities from loading to discharge. This is interesting to understand that the Act covers all the responsibilities of the carrier right from loading, that is taking over the cargo, to discharging it. A suit must be filed within 1 year of delivery with a 3-month extension. Article 3, Clause 8 says, invalidates clauses limiting carrier liability for negligence. And Article 4 holds the carrier liable for unseaworthiness if due diligence is not proven. What does this mean? You can file a suit within 1 year of delivery where the goods have been damaged or you would like to put up a claim with a 3-month extension, which means you get maximum of 15 months to file your claim. That too, the extension would be available after it has been approved. Article 3, Clause 8 invalidates clauses limiting carrier liability for negligence. What this means is that under this Clause 8, it will invalidate all the clauses which limit the carrier liability for negligence. So, there cannot be any limit of liability for negligence. This is the simple meaning. Article 4 holds the carrier liable for unseaworthiness if due diligence is not proven, which means that Article 4 says that the carrier is liable for unseaworthiness if they are not able to prove that due diligence was made and that they have the required certifications for seaworthiness. Clause 2 of Article 4 excludes carrier liability for crew faults, fire, unless due to carrier's fault, sea perils, acts of God, war, and shipper's acts. Clause 5 limits liability to ₹6,600.67 SDRs per package or 2 SDRs per kg, unless the goods value is declared. Clause 2 of Article 4 excludes carrier liability for crew faults, which means that if the crew is at fault or there is fire, unless it was due to carrier's fault, sea perils, acts of God, war, and other shippers' acts, then it excludes carrier liability in such cases. Claim 5, Clause 5 limits the liability to 666.67 SDRs per package or 2 SDRs per kg, unless the value is good value is declared to be otherwise. Limitation doesn't apply to intentional or reckless acts by the carrier. Disputes under 1 crore may be bypassed by claiming willful misconduct or recklessness. Limitation doesn't apply to intentional or reckless acts by the carrier, which means that if you are able to prove that there was an intentional or a recklessness by the carrier for which caused the damage, then there is no limit to your claim. Disputes under 1 crore may be bypassed by claiming willful misconduct or recklessness. You can bypass the 1 crore limit by saying that there was willful misconduct or recklessness on the part of the carrier. Of course, you would have to prove that. Contract of affreightment. A contract of affreightment is for carrying goods by sea with the charge called freight. It can be a charter party renting the ship to the charterer, a bill of lading carrying goods in a general ship with the consignor as the shipper. In both, the carrier ensures the safe delivery of goods. What is a contract of affreightment? A contract of affreightment is nothing but is made for carrying goods by sea with the charge called freight. That means the charges that the shipping line is going to charge you is called freight. That is why it is called a contract of affreightment. This covers who all? It covers a charter party. That means, let's say you hire out an entire ship for, you charter an entire ship, then you become the charter party. So it covers you. A bill of lading carrying goods in a general ship. That means you have a container which is loaded onto one of the ships for the general ship which is carrying many containers. Then the consignor as the shipper is covered under bill of lading. In both the cases, the carrier ensures safe delivery of goods. So this is a contract which ensures that there is a freight being paid, then, and it covers both a charter party, that is somebody who has chartered the full ship, or if the goods are under the bill of lading. A contract of affreightment is governed by the Indian Bills of Lading Act 1856 and the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act 1925. Conditions contained in a contract of carriage by sea. A sea carriage contract includes express terms, implied terms. Express terms, terms explicitly agreed upon and written in the contract. Implied terms, terms included by law in every sea carriage contract unless excluded. A contract of affreightment is governed by the Indian Bills of Lading Act 1856 and the Carriage of Goods Act by 1925. Let's see what are the other conditions contained in a contract of carriage by sea. A sea carriage contract includes express terms and implied terms. What are express terms? Express terms are explicitly agreed upon and written in the contract. Implied terms, terms included by law in every sea carriage contract unless excluded, which means that there would be, let's say, a line that says that all rules and regulations in under a law of so and so is covered for this C carriage, unless there is a statement which says that these laws, that this contract excludes those laws, then this will not be an implied term. Otherwise, it's an implied term that the contract is always covered by the law of the country. There are four implied terms. Implied warranty of seaworthiness. The ship owner warrants seaworthiness at sailing and loading. This ends once the ship sails, but must be renewed at the start of each voyage stage. Implied warranty of commencement of voyage. The ship must be ready to sail and proceed with reasonable speed and diligence. Non-deviation of voyage. No unnecessary deviation from the customary voyage course. Let's look at in detail. There are four implied terms. Implied warranty of seaworthiness. The ship owner warrants seaworthiness at sailing and loading, which means that he has a certification that the ship is seaworthy at the time of sailing as well as loading. This ends once the ship sails, which means that that certificate is now of no use because it was confirmed that it was the vehicle was the ship was seaworthy. However, this seaworthiness warranty needs to be renewed at the start of each voyage stage. Implied warranty of commencement of voyage. The ship must be ready to sail and proceed with reasonable speed and diligence. So, which means that whatever is the specified speed of the ship, there has to be proper process followed to ensure that it is seaworthy and can sail at that reasonable speed. Non-deviation of voyage. No unnecessary deviation from the customary voyage course. If a ship is supposed to go from point A to point B without any stop, it cannot be just moving to point B or point C in between where it is not required. However, if there is a deviation, there are other provisions that have to be taken care of. Shipper not to ship dangerous goods. The shipper can't ship dangerous goods and is liable for any damage caused. Bill of lading. A bill of lading acknowledges shipment is transferable and is used for goods on a general ship. Shipper not to ship dangerous goods. The shipper can't ship dangerous goods and is liable for any damage caused. This is in case where you have not classified those dangerous goods under any of the clauses that we looked at earlier, or you have absolutely not put any kind of markings on the dangerous goods and they have not classified or they do not qualify to be dangerous goods as per the packaging. In this situation, if there is any damage caused by those goods and then it is later on found that they were dangerous goods, you are liable to be punished. Bill of lading. A bill of lading acknowledges shipment is transferable and is used for goods on a general ship. So a bill of lading is only used for goods on a general ship. That means you have a container either full or empty or half of it full, but it is on a general ship with other many other containers or many other packages, then a bill of lading is applicable. What does the bill of lading do? It acknowledges shipment. That means it the shipping line accepts responsibility or accepts ownership of the product or of the goods for the sake of the voyage. It is transferable. That means that the ownership can be transferred. We understood that this is used for goods on a general ship. A charter party proves the contract. A bill of lading acknowledges receipt. So this is a difference between what a charter party does and what a bill of lading does. A charter party proves the contract. That means you have contracted the full ship. So that is what a charter party would prove. A bill of lading acknowledges receipt. That means the shipping line acknowledges receipt of the goods. Responsibilities, liabilities, and rights of carrier by sea. Responsibilities of the carrier for every contract of carriage of goods by sea, the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act 1925. The carrier ship owner must ensure before and at the start of the voyage the ship is seaworthy, the ship is properly equipped and supplied, all areas for carrying goods including holds and refrigerating chambers are fit and safe for cargo. We looked at what is the difference between a charter party and the bill of lading. Now let's understand the responsibilities, liabilities and rights of carrier by sea. Responsibilities of the carrier are covered under the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act 1925. The carrier, that is the ship owner, must ensure before and at the start of every voyage the ship is seaworthy, the ship is properly equipped and supplied, that means it has got all its equipment running correctly and has got enough supplies for the voyage. All areas of carrying goods including holds and refrigerating chambers are fit and safe for cargo. The carrier must carefully handle, stow, carry and discharge the goods. The carrier must issue a bill of lading with required details upon the shipper's demand. What are the other two conditions? The other two responsibilities are the carrier must carefully handle, stow, carry and discharge the goods. That means the carrier must handle the goods properly, keep them safely in their hold or wherever required, carry them through the voyage and discharge the goods at destination. The carrier must issue a bill of lading with required details upon the shipper's demand. So a bill of lading is actually a receipt which is issued by a carrier stating that they have received the goods for the purpose of the travel or the transportation and need to be handed over back to the consigner or the consignee at the destination. Liabilities. The Act specifies the following liabilities. The carrier is liable for negligence and marine insurance is needed for sea perils. Dangerous goods shipped with consent can be destroyed or rendered harmless by the carrier without liability unless a suit is filed within 1 year. The Act specifies the following liabilities. What are they? The carrier is liable for negligence and marine insurance is needed for sea perils, which means that a carrier can be sued for or is liable for any negligence on their part. And you require marine insurance to cover sea perils. Dangerous goods shipped with consent can be destroyed or rendered harmless by the carrier without liability unless a suit is filed within 1 year. Let's say there are certain dangerous goods that were shipped with the consent of the shipping line, that is the shipper, the shipping line, then they can be destroyed or rendered harmless by the carrier without liability unless a suit is filed within 1 year. So if you realize that your goods have been rendered harmless or they have been destroyed due to some problem at sea, then the carrier does not have any liability. Harmless by the carrier without liability, which means that they have to be liable for the damage or rendering them harmless. However, you need to file a suit within 1 year to claim damages. A carrier of goods by sea has the following rights. Right to claim freight. The carrier can claim the agreed freight from the shipper. Right of lien. The carrier can lien goods until freight and charges are paid. Right to claim damages for breach of contract. The carrier can claim damages for breach of contract by the shipper. We looked at responsibilities and duties. Let's look at the rights. A carrier of goods by sea has the following rights. Right to claim freight. So if there is an agreed, it is a common carrier, there is a goods, there is an agreed freight that you have agreed with the shipping line, you need, as a shipper, you need to pay that freight to the shipping line. And they have the right to claim that freight. Right of lien. The carrier can lien goods until freight and charges are paid. So if you default on paying charges of freight, then the shipping line can hold the goods at their side. Right to claim damages or for breach of contract. The carrier can claim damages for breach of contract by the shipper. If you do not adhere to your terms and conditions where you are applicable, then the shipping line can claim damages for breach of contract. Right to repudiate the contract. Can repudiate the contract of carriage and claim damages for the breach by the shipper if known to carrier before commencement of the voyage. Let's say if there has been some malpractice when in terms of handing over the goods to the shipping line can repudiate the contract of carriage, that is the bill of lading, and claim damages for the breach of the ship, breach by the shipper, if it is known to the carrier before commencement of the voyage. Let's look at multimodal transport. The Multimodal Transport of Goods Act 1993. Multimodal transportation is an integrated solution for diverse intermodal shipping needs. What is multimodal transportation? Multimodal transportation involves using at least two modes of transport under a single contract, with one provider responsible for the entire journey. Let's understand the necessity of multimodal transportation. First, let's understand that it is the Multimodal Transportation of Goods Act of 1993, where all terms and conditions are governed. Multimodal transportation is an integrated solution for diverse intermodal shipping needs. Let's say if you have your factory somewhere placed in the interiors of India where there is no port, that means it's a landlocked city, let's say Bangalore or Pune, and you would like to ship those goods, then you would need a road transport or the railways to transport those goods from your factory to the nearest port. If you use from Bangalore, you plan to use the Chennai port, then you would need to transport goods from Bangalore to Chennai. Then what happens at Chennai? At Chennai, the goods will get onto a ship, and there the Shipping Act and the Bills of Lading Act of 1856 will come into force. However, for this transportation, there will be a single contract, which is provided by just one person or one agency, and he will handle the transportation both by road as well as by shipping. Let's understand the actual meaning. What is multimodal transportation? Multimodal transportation involves using at least two modes, that is, in our example, road and sea, under a single contract. So you contact only one person and you sign one contract with him for both the modes of transportation, with one provider responsible for the entire journey. The Multimodal Transportation of Goods Act 1993 regulates goods transport from India to global destinations under one contract, ensuring security and efficiency. Imagine you use multimodal transportation, that means you use two different modes and you have to deal with two different people. Keep coordinating between them would be a cumbersome and a time-consuming process. Instead, it is better to use the multimodal mode of transport and get governed by the Multimodal Transportation of Goods Act 1993, which regulates goods transport from India to all global destinations under one single contract, ensuring security and efficiency. Section 2K defines multimodal transportation involves moving goods via at least two transport modes under one contract from India to abroad. This is self-explanatory. Section 2M, an MTO is a principal who signs and assumes responsibility for a multimodal transport contract. Who is a MTO? What does MTO stand for? MTO stands for Multimodal Transport Organization or Organizer. An MTO is a principal who signs and assumes responsibility for the multimodal transport contract. So he is the person who signs the contract which covers multiple modes of transportation. Section 2 further says a multimodal transport document is proof of a transport contract title and MTO's receipt of goods. So a multimodal transport document which is signed by the MTO is proof of a transport contract title of transfer and MTO's receipt of goods. That means that the MTO cannot now deny that he has not received the goods, because it is a receipt of goods that he has signed. Section 10, an MTO can reserve if the goods details are inaccurate. Otherwise, they are deemed in good condition. The MTO is liable for loss, damage, delay, and consequential losses. An MTO is liable only when the consignment is under their charge. Section 10. An MTO can reserve if the goods details are inaccurate. Otherwise, they are deemed in good condition. So, an MTO needs to ensure that when he is signing the receipt, the MTO receipt, that all the details are accurate. If he doesn't go ahead and point out any mistakes, they are deemed to be in good condition. The MTO is liable for loss, damage, delay, and consequential losses, which means once the MTO has signed the document, he is liable for any loss, damage, delay, and consequential losses to the cargo. An MTO is liable only when the consignment is under their charge. Of course, this is applicable for any contract. If the material is either on the truck by road or on the ship, the MTO is liable, but he is not liable when it has been unloaded and handed over to the consignee.